neat thing. You can go home with a grafted fruit tree and pretty good chance it'll grow and make it
a very good chance.
Yeah.
Since they're done by experts.
It's by experts, that's right. And also there are plants for sale there. There's you can buy figs and kiwis and all sorts of other neat plants. There are books for sale. Old Orchard Society has a great collection of fruit growing books, which will be available.
Do you know in the past there's been somebody who's there that will, I don't know if he sharpens things on the spot.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. You know, he sells tools. I'm not sure about the sharpening side of it, but maybe that's sharpening too.
Maybe I'm thinking of somebody
different. Yeah. And that could be. I don't know for sure who all of the people that will be doing things there, but it is a really super interesting event. The parking is free. Admission, I believe, is $5. But if you join the Home Orchard Society, which is, well, I highly recommend it. Sure. You get in for free.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in fruit, this is an event not to miss, because there's not only all these things, science to pick up and all that, but there's all of the movers and shakers in fruit growing in the Northern Willamette Valley will likely be there.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Jim, say the date again.
It's this coming Sunday.
Oh, shoot.
10 to 4 p.m.
Clackamas County Fairgrounds in...
Canby, Oregon.
It'll be a beautiful drive.
Yes.
We always talk about that because that's one of the nicest drives there, part of 99.
And the reason that the event is now on Sunday was because we used to have it on Saturdays, and there's a tax sale on Saturdays. And so many people come to that it was really hard even to find a place to park. So we made this decision that we've got to have it on a day when it's going to be calm and nice there. And so now it's really good. It's really a nice, peaceful place to go to. Except inside, where there's lots of people looking for science.
Okay, then that's the Home Orchard Society's Fruit Propagation Fair. Is that what it's called? Fruit Propagation Fair? Uh-huh. Okay. Then we also have the 2014 Spring Propagation Fair. I don't even know who sponsors this, to tell you the truth. But anyway, it's a press release that I got from it's in Lane County. In Eugene on Saturday and Sunday, the 22nd and 23rd at Lane Community College on the south end of Eugene. 11 to 4 on Saturday and 1 to 5 on Sunday at the LCC Learning Garden. It's a free event open to the public, designed to support home orchardists, vegetable gardeners, and native plant enthusiasts in and around the southern Willamette Valley. On Saturday, hundreds of varieties of scions and vegetable seeds will be shared at the fair. Gardeners with organic seeds to share are encouraged to bring them to the event. Rootstocks and grafting assistance will be available for a nominal fee. The Sunday event is designated for a variety of workshops, including grafting and seeding. Okay, that's the Spring Propagation Fair in Eugene, Lane Community College.
And if a person is going to Eugene, and I have to make a plug for an interesting gas station, just north of the exit to Lane Community College is the Sequential Biofuel Station. But if you don't have a diesel-powered vehicle to put biodiesel into, you can stop there and get a selection of all sorts of great goodies. It's a very different kind of mini-mart with healthy things.
So, I know exactly what you're talking about. I go by there all the time. Yeah, I've been there.
I make it a stop every time I go south.
Well, don't you have a diesel?
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah.
But sometimes the diesel's full, but I still
stop. You need healthy snacks.
I need to fill myself.
Okay, well, let us get on to the container gardening. And if you have any questions about container gardening or anything else, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. You hear that whining in the background? Mm-hmm. That's some construction going on here at the station. Well, I hear something. Yeah, we all hear it there. But that's fine. We can just go right over this there. It'll probably be gone in a minute or so. And they're cutting into walls and jiggering things. So
wow.
That's what's going on here. Never a dull moment. I imagine that's kind of the way it is in your life too, Maggie.
Yeah.
You were at...
Recently, yeah.
KATU doing something and you do regularly there this morning.
I do. I do. I cook soup for them every month.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Huh. On camera?
On camera.
Yeah, okay.
Well, except, as you know, if you've ever seen a cooking show, they show you the steps, and they put it in the oven, and then they pull it out as if it had been baked. So, which means you have to do it twice, at least twice. You know, do one in advance so it's all done. And I'm usually on the air for 5 or 6 minutes. You can't do anything start to finish in 5 or 6 minutes. So even the part which is an on-camera demonstration, have to do a great deal of that in advance as well.
It reminds me of the comedian Stephen Wright said once, he said, I made instant coffee in a microwave and almost went back in time. Instant coffee in a microwave.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, so.
Anyway, it was fun. I enjoy it, but it, you know.
And what kind of soup was it today?
It's asparagus leek chowder. It's, you know, it's springtime, you know. Asparagus is at its peak right now. And I did a little thing of how you deal with leeks, because it turns out most people don't know what part you eat and what you don't eat, you know, and how to clean them and all that.
Well, we'll just jump right in here. Do you recommend growing asparagus in pots?
No.
Okay. Right off the bat, there's one
but leeks,
down.
leeks would work.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
The basic rule of thumb that I use is, first of all, if you're growing things in a container, by definition, you have a very small space to work with.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people use container gardening because they simply don't have a garden at all. Me, for instance, I live in a condominium. Mm-hmm. I have a patio about as big as a picnic table, and that's it. That's it for space. And so everything that I grow has to fit in a container on that patio. So when you have a very limited space, you have to be very careful about how you use that space. And if you put in something that makes a very large plant in proportion to the part that you eat,
mm-hmm.
you're not using your space efficiently.
Not worth it, yeah.
Like cabbage. Somebody asked me the other day, can I plant these cabbage seeds? And I said, no, don't do it. Because they've obviously never seen a cabbage in the field. They've only seen it in the supermarket. And they don't know about the big outer leaves. It'll take up the whole container for one cabbage, which is 29 cents a pound at Safeway. You know, it just doesn't make sense. So right. That's why I say no to asparagus. For one thing, it takes several years before you actually get a crop.
Yeah.
Each individual sprout coming up is just one stalk of asparagus, and by the time you harvest it, it's gone. You're not going to get any more that year.
So it's not that these things won't grow. It's just that it's probably not the best use of your limited space.
Exactly right. Okay. Exactly right. You have to think forward a little bit. You know?
Well, so before we get into the nuts and bolts of container gardening, I want to ask the question, and after I ask the question, then we'll go to the phones, and then you can answer the question.
Okay.
Is, I forgot what my question was going to be. But we'll talk about, we'll go to the phones, and then I'll come back to it. Good morning. Good morning, Anna. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah, good morning, Glenn.
Hey.
Thanks for doing the show again.
Sure.
I have a couple questions. Can I plant kale, collards, beets, and lettuce seeds outdoors this week?
Yes.
Yep.
And good for you. Those are wonderful choices for container gardens.
Good. And my other question is, do you recommend always soaking the seeds overnight before you put them out?
Not necessarily. We're going to have good weather anyway. I mean, good moist weather where they germinate quickly is probably not necessary. If you are a procrastinator by nature and you realize, gee, I really should have done this 2 weeks ago, then yes, soaking them ahead of time will give you a little head start.
Good.
I haven't soaked many seeds at all. Actually, the only time I really soak seeds now is just to find the viability of the seed.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, thank you. I'll get busy.
Thanks, Anna. Bye-bye.
Yeah,
bye.
This is a good week to get out there and get seeds in.
Yeah.
Before rains. I mean, you know, we'll have some more rain.
Right.
And we should also mention it's a really good time to just plant plants. This is our time right now. You know, get them out there for the weather's perfect for it.
Okay. So on the nuts and bolts parts, since I didn't remember my question, let's talk about how we get started in containers.
Okay. You have to think about several things kind of simultaneously. Start with what you want to grow. And that is a question of, I like to encourage people to think about what they like to eat. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may see something gorgeous in a catalog, but if nobody in your family likes it, you've wasted all your, you know, it's a big fat waste. What you like to eat, so get some unusual varieties of that. Let's say salad greens, for instance. And then try one thing that's brand new. Just mm-hmm. one. Leave yourself a little bit of room to experiment with something you've never grown before. So then you have a list. And depending on what time of year it is and what your plants are, you're either going to buy seeds or buy small plants. We call them starts. You mm-hmm. buy baby plants. And then you, somewhere along in there, you have acquired your containers. And if you're buying them new, you have lots of choices. Each choice has, like everything in life, a plus and a minus, you know, good side and bad side. What most people think of when they think of containers is terracotta, because they're beautiful. If they get a crack and you get freezing weather, it's going to, mm-hmm. rain's going to go in there. It's going to, then when it freezes to ice, it's going to expand and your thing will fall apart. I got one of those at my house right now.
Me too.
Yeah. Wooden containers are really very handsome. After a while, they're going to start to rot unless you put some wood protector in, which is not great for the plants. So mm-hmm. it's one of those little bit of yes, a little bit of no. I really like those, I'm not sure what you call this material. It's kind of molded foam. It's some kind of space mm-hmm. age something or other. They're shaped to look like stoneware or terracotta, but they're very lightweight. You can pick them up with, you know, just the fingers of one hand. And they seem to be the most durable in our Northwest winters.
I'm sorry. I can't picture that, or I don't have the name of it, what it is.
Yeah.
I've seen them. I know what's...
Okay. All right. Yeah. So pretty common, though, if people
yes.
looked at them at
yes.
nurseries,
yeah.
garden stores.
And buy the biggest one you think you can handle and you think you can afford. Because a collection of small containers will give you more trouble than a large container which has the same amount of space. Mm-hmm. That is to say, if you had 5 1-gallon pots, you could put the same amount of plants as if you had 1 5-gallon pot. But the larger one is not going to dry out as quickly. You'll mm-hmm. be able to fit in more plants, and you'll have it's just easier to manage
okay.
the bigger it is.
So 1 5-gallon pot rather than 5 1-gallon pots.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Although they make them larger than 5 gallons.
Oh, they do. I just used that.
And it'd probably be better.
Even better.
Yeah.
Even better,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just used that because the arithmetic is simple.
right.
If you get a really big one, plan ahead of time for something underneath it to move it around, because you're going to want to do that.
You mean like wheels? Or?
Like, yeah, a little platform with wheels on
okay.
it.
All right.
One of the glories of having a garden in a container is you can move it around to follow the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the season gets, we start now in the spring, even at midday, the sun is in a different position in the sky than it will be at midday in August. So your sun patterns change over the course of the season. And if you want to move your garden so that it either is or is not in direct sun,
yeah.
depending what you're growing, mm-hmm. then if you have the wheels, it's easier to move it around.
Okay. So
which is another good reason for having a container garden in the first place, because if you're growing it out in the dirt, you can't do that. You can't move it around.
That's true. And with this day and age, when more houses coming in and trees getting bigger,
right,
yeah. you end up with more shade.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, so we've got the containers. You may have acquired them through the years, whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to be planting in an old wooden shoe or whatever. Well,
mm-hmm.
maybe not. It might be too small. Is there such thing as too small, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
You're just spending all your time watering and,
yeah,
and trying to keep the
right.
plant alive. Okay.
Right,
what?
Right.
How small would you say is too small?
I wouldn't go anything below a 1 gallon.
All right.
Yeah. But I mean, you buy them in what's called a 4-incher, which is, but if people don't know, it's not the size of the plant, it's the size of the pot
mm-hmm.
across the top. You see these ads, like, you know, in Fred Meyer Garden Center, 4-inch plants. And the people go, and it's not 4 inches, and they are often confused.
Right. Okay, we've got the container. What are we going to? What kind of medium are we going to put into it?
We are going to put in it commercial planter mix, of which there's many brands. What we're not going to do is we're not going to go out to your neighbor's backyard and dig up something out of the ground, because it's got too many seeds, it's got too many pathogens, it's just going to give you a whole bunch of problems. You want to start with sterile planting mix, which already has things in it to lighten it up, perlite or vermiculite or something like that. A good rule of thumb that I encourage people to do is go into the store, the garden center, and pick up a large bag of what's called potting soil. And if you're surprised by how light it is, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. If you pick it up and it's really, really heavy, it's probably just topsoil, and that's not what you want.
Okay.
They make those things that have slow-release fertilizer in them. They make things with slow-release, those water gel things already mixed in, and that's convenient, but you don't have to do that. You can just buy standard potting mix and then add some of those things on your own.
And we'll get to that when we talk about fertilizer. Tammy, why don't we take our first musical break, and then we'll come back with the phone callers, and then we'll get back to Maggie Stuckey talking about vegetable gardening here. This is The Dirt Bag. I'm with Jim Gilbert, and the music this time is, we've got our theme as usual. We got the first one. It has to do with March, total March. We've got lions, we've got lambs, we've got springtime. How about that? So let's go to the first one. This is Dire Straits from their first album called Lions. Dire Straits on The Dirt Bag. Okay, we'll go to the phones. Esteban, I believe
yes,
you're
right. Good morning. Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
My question is about raspberries. I'm out here in the gorge, so my season is a little bit behind Portland, but pruning raspberries. I've got about 4 to 6 foot of growth right now from last year on the canes. And when is the time to prune those back, and how short should they be pruned?
Well, I don't prune mine back at all, or shorten the canes.
You don't.
When I say, you know, time to prune raspberries, I guess what I really mean is cutting out the old stalks. And it used to be that it was kind of recommended that we, you know, cut them off about 5 feet or so. But now the recommendation, I don't know that there is really a recommendation, because there's going to be productive growth along the whole cane, and by cutting it off, you get rid of that. So I'd rather have fewer canes left to their full length.
And long, right.
Right, right. Yeah. And then loop them over and tie them down.
Okay, they get 8-10 feet long by the time the summer's on. Okay, well, that's very helpful.
Okay.
And thanks for being here always, Glenn, and your guests as well. Thank
you're welcome. Thanks. Okay, Tammy, is there another? Okay. All right, so we'll continue on now with our containers. We've got hopefully, containers, the medium. You've decided on what you're going to do. What's next?
Start planting.
Either seeds or the
either seeds or plants or seedlings, and a good combination. Right now, you'd be putting in salad greens, cilantro, pansies, which is a wonderful edible flower that's a cool season. Keep something ready to go in when something is past its peak. Like the lettuces are going to bolt when it starts to get hot. Right now it seems impossible that it could ever get that hot, but it will. And when the lettuce bolts, which means it shoots way up high and the leaves turn bitter, the whole plant comes out, and then maybe you have a baby tomato about ready to go in. So if you can, think 2 weeks ahead always. What's going to happen 2 weeks from now? And I'll be ready to have another plant to go in where something just came out. Again, we're talking about the fact that you have very limited space, and what you're doing is trying to make maximum use. Farmers who have, you know, acres and acres do what they call succession planting. And this is the exact same concept, reduced down to a couple of containers.
One thing our listeners might want to keep in mind is that there are other reasons to have containers other than just lack of space.
Right.
It could be that you have rocky soil or contaminated soil, if you wish.
Right.
It may be that you want, I know my friends Richard and Lori Vollmer, you probably know them at Garden Fever, Richard has said he will never put another eggplant into the ground. He's always going to put them in pots now. Because it's just one of those. Tammy says, why? Because they mature.
Mm-hmm.
They always mature. Mm-hmm. And sometimes with eggplant, you don't get that until, you know, late September or even October, I guess, sometimes. And so he's just had much better luck. He's planting them in 7-gallon pots.
Right.
So
the soil would be warmer in a pot.
Would be warmer.
And so that's
what
another reason.
And another thing is, a lot of times people just don't have the sunshine.
Yeah.
If you're growing vegetables and flowers, or plants that make a flower before they make the vegetable, which when you think about it is most of our common vegetables, it needs a minimum of 6 hours of sunlight a day. And if you've got a shady garden, you just forget it. So people use containers in the sunniest spot they have. Also, people really like having a little herb garden right by the kitchen door. You just step outside even when it's pouring rain, snip off a few things for whatever you're cooking that day. There's lots of reasons for containers. Also, it's pretty. It's a way to have a compact, pleasing combination of shapes and colors because it's so concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a whole lot easier to maintain than a big garden.
Another reason that a lot of people do it is because if they're renting.
Yes.
And they're going to move possibly, and they'll take their plants with them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. The biggest challenge, and we should talk about this for sure, because I don't want people to be disappointed. The biggest challenge with containers is keeping them watered.
Uh-huh.
In the ground, a plant has several square feet of soil around it, which serves as kind of insulation. And the plant's roots will be able to pull in moisture from all around as far as it needs to.
And go down.
In a container, what's around the plant is air. And if it's hot, like it gets in July and August, or windy, or even worse, both of those things at the same time, a container can dry out in a day. I mean, it's not at all uncommon that you need to be out there with your hose or your watering can in the dead of August every day doing that stuff. I think that the benefits of container garden outweigh that one problem, but you do need to be aware of it and you need to plan for it. There's this product called water gel, something or other, little bits of something that expands Mm-hmm. It's another space age something or other. I have no idea what it's really made out
right.
of. But it absorbs water and expands about 20 times, and then it gradually releases that water. So you mix those little globules of stuff into your soil and water it really well, and they get big, and then they gradually release the water over a period of several weeks. It doesn't completely replace watering, but if you have to go away for a few days, for instance, it just gives you a little extra help.
And I've never read any harmful effects of these
no.
crystals or something like that, but we should note they're not considered organic. In if you're an organic gardener and are worried
that's,
about
that's
certification
true.
And things like that.
That's
so
true.
Just,
that's true. The other thing you don't want to do is dump them down your sink. Because it'll stop it up.
You're not speaking from experience, are you?
I've heard about it, not me personally, but I have heard of somebody who did that.
Well, while we're on this line then of caring for the plants, what about fertilizing? Because you're really, you know, responsible for about, you know, I don't know, 90% of the plant's
right.
needs
you have
here
to do,
at this point.
You have to do everything. And it goes hand in hand with the watering. When you're watering, you're also washing away whatever fertilizer is in the soil. So you have to replenish it more frequently than you would in a traditional, in the ground garden.
From an organic standpoint, what do you recommend? Fish fertilizer
fish
emulsion?
Yeah, the fish that's wonderful stuff. There's several good commercial organic fertilizers. I don't want to mention any names because, you know, you might not be able to find something. But anything that's organic, that's a good either all-purpose, you know, mm-hmm. Should we go over the three nutrients?
You can mention it.
Okay. Yeah. Every fertilizer in the world has to be absorbed in liquid form. That's the only way the roots can take it up. So whether you buy a powder or a concentrate or those little beads of stuff, they've got to be dissolved in water for the plant to take them. And every package will show on it somewhere three numbers which designate the three main nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, NPK, always in that sequence. Nitrogen stimulates leaf growth, so if you're growing something that you're going to eat the leaves of, like salad greens or kale, like Anna who called earlier, you would want something that has a good amount of the first number. Phosphorus stimulates flower growth, so if you're growing edible flowers or any vegetable that starts with a flower, like tomatoes or peppers or eggplants or beans or peas or any of those, you want something that has at least an equal amount of the third number. And then potassium just kind of stimulates overall good health. So what's that real common fertilizer? Comes in a yellow box.
Organic? Or
it's not organic.
Miracle-Gro?
Yeah, Miracle-Gro.
Uh-huh.
A Miracle-Gro is 15-30-15. Just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a general all-purpose fertilizer that would work for just about any kind of edible garden. And by the way, that's what I know about is edible plants. I don't know much about the other things.
Okay. Well, that's what we talk about here.
Okay.
I might add something about the watering, going back to that for just a minute.
Okay.
One of the things that we have a lot of issues with and a lot of concern people express to us is really over-watering.
Ah.
Because as well as keeping things well watered, the other part of it is when the plant gets too much water too frequently, and then actually that can hurt it as badly as being dry. And I'd say that in our experience, especially in spring and fall, when the demands of the heat and when it's not so hot, the demands of the plant for water are less. But and so you have to be careful about that, not to just
right.
keep adding too much.
Right, because the Mother Nature's already giving us quite a lot.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
And the other thing about watering is people need to remember to water really deeply,
mm-hmm.
because if they just water the first couple of inches of the container, the roots are going to go where the water is, so they'll never develop strong root system all the way down.
Do you recommend putting a kind of a catch tray under to catch some of the excess water?
Sure. Particularly if you've got it on a nice redwood deck.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, let's take the phone call, and then we'll go to our second musical break here, which is after the phone call. Buddy Guy, and it's Mary Had a Little Lamb. Okay. Who do we have?
Anna.
Oh, Anna.
Anna again.
Okay.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, and my other question is, do you think it's harmful to me to water my edible plants with gray water? And by gray water, I mean water from when I'm rinsing the dishes.
I would stay away from it.
I would too. I would too.
I doubt that there would be, you know, that you would get deathly sick. Mm-hmm. But you never know.
Okay.
And I just wouldn't do it. I wouldn't have any problem, though, using that water to water your ornamentals or even fruit trees.
Right.
But nothing that's going to splash onto the stuff that you're going to eat directly.
All right. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, Anna.
We should get somebody on here from the city to talk about gray water at some point, or maybe one of the soil and water conservation districts. All right. Anyway, here's Mary Had a Little Lamb, just like March goes out as. Okay, that's Buddy Guy from 1968. Jim's just wagging his head. He says, I wish I remembered the 60s. No, actually, he didn't say that.
Yeah, good times.
Oh, Timey does too. Okay, well, let's go right into the stumper here. And after this, get your thinking caps on, as my mom used to say. Just do with fruit state beverages. Fruit, we had that.
Again, thinking that you've got very limited space if you're dealing with containers, but you want to grow things that would otherwise take kind of grow sideways and grow out to the front yard. Any kind of a trellis, anything that you can rig up that you can to which you can attach these plants as it grows upward. So beans and peas automatically attach themselves to something vertical. They've got this wonderful little tendrils, and that's what they do. They swing around until they find something to latch onto. the sort of classic thing of a teepee made out of bamboo poles, mm-hmm. to pyramid mm-hmm. shape. That's it takes advantage of that natural tendency of them to climb. But anything else that would benefit from growing upward, like a cucumber, or even an indeterminate tomato, like any of the cherry tomatoes, they have a way of just getting growing up to the roof line if you don't watch out, and then they start flopping over and you lose the fruit. But if you can tie them up onto something, mm-hmm. any kind of a trellis, make it stronger than you think you need, because some of this stuff gets heavy.
And the wind blows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking just about vegetables in pots, but fruit can be grown there too. I mean, right away, strawberries comes to my mind. I don't know if that's an efficient use of pots, but we also have, you know, fruit bushes and fruit trees even.
Sure, and you can use strawberries as kind of a ground cover. And so you can get, say, if you put a columnar apple, which is one of my favorite fruit trees to plant in a pot, because it doesn't take up any room, it just goes straight up, and you doesn't have those side branches that typical apple tree does. Underneath that, you can put strawberries, and so you can have the apples and the strawberries at the same time.
That's a great idea. You know, yeah.
The main thing is that you have to monitor your water, because you're going to have the strawberries are going to be pulling water for themselves, and if you aren't careful, the pot can dry out, and the apple won't get it.
For a fruit tree or a columnar tree, what's the minimum size pot that you would recommend?
A lot of people, minimum size, I mean, you can grow them in a 5-gallon pot, but eventually, they pretty quickly will fill that pot with roots. And, you know, like a 12-gallon pot or a half a whiskey barrel, is a lot of people like using those because they're attractive, and they'll let a tree can be in there for 5-6 years before it'll fill that pot with roots.
So and then what do you do?
Well, then you get your neighbors to come over, and you tip the plant on its side, and you take during the dormant season when it's not in leaf, you take the plant out of the pot, and you start cutting the roots back.
You do a rootectomy.
Essentially, right. It's bonsai, in other words, too.
You don't upside down.
Then take about a third of the root mass away, cut back the top by probably an equivalent amount. So you're reducing the load on the plant for the next year. Put it back in the pot, put new potting soil in, and start over again.
We do have some answers, or at least some callers, for the stumper. Sam, what you got for us?
How about Oregon grape?
Well, that's a pretty good guess. I think that's the isn't that the Oregon State flower?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, the Oregon grape is the Oregon State flower.
Okay. 50% for that one. It's at least an Oregon official something.
That's right. Okay, we also have a caller who has a question. Susan.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have questions about red wigglers.
Okay.
Worms. Mm-hmm. I have some in a bin, and I have it set up to where the liquid goes down in the bottom. Mm-hmm. And I want to use that for fertilizer, but I don't know. It looks pretty strong, so I've been diluting it.
Yeah.
That's one question, and then I have a couple more little things here.
Okay. First of all, you know, it's not really or shouldn't be considered necessarily a fertilizer, although it can be, but what it really is leachate. That is to say, it's just a little, it's just what's drained off from the vermicomposting process.
But people sell it.
Well, they sell compost tea.
Uh-huh, I see.
Which is different. That is a brewed compost, and what you're getting there is just trillions of bacteria, and not necessarily any nutrients. So you could have nutrients in there, but you have to make sure that your compost, your worm bin compost, your vermicompost, didn't go anaerobic, because then there could be alcohols and phenols and butric acids and other things that are toxic to plants.
I don't know what that means.
Well, if it stinks at all, mm-hmm. then it's gone anaerobic. See, when you have an aerobic compost pile, like uh-huh. most outdoor piles and most worm bins,
yeah.
then the major players are aerobic bacteria.
Right.
That they use oxygen. If it's anaerobic, then these bacteria can still function. They'll break stuff down, certainly, but they function in the absence of oxygen. Well, maybe only 10% oxygen is all they need. And they don't give off heat as a byproduct like the aerobic bacteria can do, but instead they give off these compounds, these sulfur compounds, these butyric acid, or you know, vomit smell, or rotten eggs, sulfur.
I understand this now.
Okay, so
also,
if it's,
if I have any fruit flies in there, does that mean it's no good compost?
No, it doesn't mean that.
Okay.
But so if it's, you know, if it's just, if it's earthy smelling, it doesn't have to be sweet smelling, but earthy smelling, and it never has been stinky, then you probably can use that leachate, but I would cut it or dilute it. You know, maybe you know, feel free, you know, 3 or 4 to 1 even.
Right. I have used it, and I can't say if it did any good or not, just in my little gardens and stuff. But I did dilute it down to where it looked like a weak tea.
Okay, so what I want you to do now is to, you know, whatever, just choose one or two tomato plants or whatever that you've been irrigating, and only use it on those plants and not the others.
Right.
And then at the end of the season, you call me again and say, I still can't tell any difference.
Okay.
Or whatever you might call.
I think I didn't use it consistently. I used Alaska fish and different stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but the other thing is, go ahead, do you have something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Also, what about the stuff they live in, that where I put the food in there?
Yeah.
That's what turns into the compost looking stuff, but when I try to put it in something, the worms would get in there in the garden too. So what about that?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
And they eat up the plants, you think?
No. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to live they won't live at all during the fall and winter. I mean,
right.
Because that, but
I wouldn't care if some of them disappeared because there's too many.
What most people do is they'll actually take a screen, like hardware cloth, maybe quarter-inch hardware cloth.
This is for worm composting, trying to get the worms out.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you put the compost on this hardware cloth, and the worms don't go. The finer stuff will go through, and the worms will stay on top.
Yeah, but he's not talking about, at least I don't think, shaking it. So the compost.
No.
Well, maybe Jim was. No, what I do to harvest it is that. I don't know what kind your worm bin looks like, but hopefully it's shallow because the red wigglers are surface feeders. Mm-hmm. So what I do is essentially remove the surface. So with a pitchfork, and my bin is like 2 or 3 feet wide, with a pitchfork I just gently take the top layer off, or as far down as I need to go where I don't find too many worms, and so the bottom part is just total vermicompost. Mm-hmm. It's great, but it'll have a few worms in there. But for the vast majority, are in the skimmed part that I will then put back in to the worm bin. That makes sense?
Yes.
So my worm bin has been in continuous operation now for about 22 or 23 years.
Wow.
So this is the worms that I have now are descendants of those original worms.
All right.
You've got some old worms in there.
Yeah. Some of them are using canes, right?
I think maybe some regular worms got in with mine in the move. They're bigger and they have a lighter pink little band on their bellies. Do you think that that's the regular wild worms?
Well, how long are they?
Well, they're longer than the red wigglers.
I mean, are they 4 or 5 inches? Or?
No, they're probably about... Maybe 3 or 4.
Well, there is more than one species of worm that will survive in a worm bin.
So I don't have to try to get those out of there. I was thinking.
Heck no.
Pick them out.
Okay. They're having a worm party in there.
Yeah, I love my worm. Mm-hmm. All
right.
Okay, well, I guess that's about it then.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, what do we got? Boris. Is that what it's, Boris or Morris?
Boris.
Okay, Boris, what do you got for us?
I got a guess on your state fruit and then a question.
Okay.
I'm going to guess cherry.
Nope.
State fruit.
Nope. You're in the right. It's a tree anyway. We'll narrow it down.
All right.
Good guess. What's your question?
Yeah, my question about composting at home. You mentioned something that really caught my interest about this anaerobic aspect. I've been composting food waste for years, and the way I do it, it always does have that rotten smell to it. I mix a layer of this rotten food with a layer of wood chips or grass clippings, but it does have that rotten smell. Now, eventually that smell goes away. I have a rotating compost bin, and it turns into something that's more, I guess you would consider it more acceptable, but you mentioned that if it's ever anaerobic, then it's no good. Is that correct?
Generally, that's true. I mean, I would be very loath to use it.
And it creates these toxins that then once you spread it in the ground, even though it smells okay, those toxins are still present?
They can be. You know, the alcohols are toxic. And what I know most about this came from Elaine Ingham from Soil Food Web, a former soil professor at OSU, and now has her own business, the Soil Food Web, and is the leader in this. And so you could research that on her site, or at least search for her, Elaine Ingham, and Soil Food Web. But I'm very cautious to use compost that has been anaerobic, certainly around my vegetables. I think it would be fine if it's into the position, it's in the condition that you mentioned, that it's now kind of what we might consider usable form. You know, to get rid of it, you might put it around your ornamentals, but I wouldn't put it in your vegetable bed.
Okay, well then my final question would be, if I'm composting food waste, how do I keep it from turning anaerobic? I mean, what's the trick there?
Have a lot of carbon source, because all food scraps are a nitrogen source, or a green source, if you will.
Okay.
And my rule of thumb is to have twice as much carbon material as nitrogen. And so wood chips is good, but, you know, however much food you're putting in, you know, put in twice as much wood chip.
I've been doing kind of just the opposite, and that's probably where my problem is.
And the other kind of compounding factor that you mentioned was that you're alternating with grass. Grass is also a nitrogen source. So you're just overwhelming these organisms with too much nitrogen. They need a lot more carbon than nitrogen.
Well, now, it seems to me I heard somewhere that if the grass dries out and is dead and becomes more like straw, then it's okay to use that way. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I think you said that, actually.
Could be, because it's true.
Yeah.
You know, leaves are another source, or bales of straw. And, you know, you always wonder about weed seeds, but may not matter too much in a compost if you're turning it.
Okay, so if the food scraps have started to smell somewhat, not terribly rotten and terribly, you know, smelly, if I double up on the carbon versus the food, I'm probably going to be okay?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's a good tip then. Thank you.
All right. And one thing just to say about wood chips is they're very, very high carbon nitrogen ratio. And if you're purchasing the wood chips, I would purchase straw instead and use that, because it'll break down much faster. And wood chips themselves will take a long time to rot. So if you put that in your soil, you can actually remove some nitrogen from the soil while the wood chips are decomposing. So that's just one thing we've discovered.
Yeah,
so,
and you wouldn't want to put wood chips in your soil, but you could certainly put the compost on your soil.
On top of it, yeah,
right,
that's fine.
That'd be fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm using wood chips that I either
that
produced right here or I got from a neighbor, but yeah, they do take a long time to break down, you're right.
Yeah, but
and
they
when I put the compost on, quite often there'll still be remnants of wood chips in it, so that's not a good thing either.
Well, it's not the end of the world, you know, especially if it's been 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh. If you're putting it on the surface of the soil, like as a mulch, then it's not a problem. But if you're mixing it in the soil, then that could be an issue.
Yeah, I'm mixing it in.
And I wouldn't want that in your vegetable beds.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, go for straw or leaves.
Okay.
But stay away from shredded newspaper or something like that. It just gums up.
I wouldn't have been inclined to do that anyway.
Well, it is a legitimate carbon source, but let's stay away from
that. A few other toxics involved.
Well, that's not the issue. It's just that it can be put to a higher use, and it tends to gum up the compost.
Oh, all right.
So leaves, straw, wood chips, in that order.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, do we have any guesses on the stumper, Tammy? No. Okay, we're going to hold out here for another minute or two, but after that. The question is, what is the Oregon state fruit? No.
Official
state fruit, or the official state beverage. Well, either one we'll accept now.
And I'm amazed with all the access to technology that no one has looked this up.
Well, there's no prize. We got to have some steak here.
We need to work on that, don't we?
That's right.
Motivation.
Oh, no, I think people are just being purists. They want to just look inside their own head.
It's like doing crosswords.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, Tammy has a question. Oh, we have one right here on our table here that we haven't answered here. Caller wants an idea for where to go to hire someone to work in her garden. Well, I know, that's an interesting...
That's why God invented teenage boys.
Yeah. Neighbors. I don't know how I'd trust a teenage boy in my garden, tell you the truth. But clean up and things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. I don't know. I think maybe a local nursery. You know, just right away, my mind goes to Garden Fever as I do a lot of presentations there. And I see, you know, young guys working there. Maybe they want to moonlight. They kind of know what's going on.
What about school? Local school.
There's the Hort program.
Well, there's that. Yeah, sure. I mean, high schools and, you know, there's...
I mean, I think they need a little bit of knowledge.
If you called up the local... You know, if you're just picking up leaves and mowing the lawn. I did that when I was in high school. Oh, yeah. You know?
Yeah, and look at where you are now, though.
Look at that, right? Sitting here with you.
No good. Ended up a no good. Okay, well, let's finish up on the containers here. If there's anything else that you want to add to what we've talked about today, either of you?
Well, being as it's early spring, a real successful thing in containers is all kinds of lettuces and salad greens. And there's a way to keep it going longer than you might think. It's called cut and come again. Cut and come again. What you do is you have a mixture of leaf lettuces and other salad greens growing in a great big beautiful pot, and it looks gorgeous. You don't have to pull out the whole plant. Erase from your mind what it looks like in the supermarket. You don't need a whole thing, particularly if you have a small household. You know perfectly well half of it's going to go slimy before you get to eating it. So pull out just two or three leaves from the outer edges, or grab a hold of the top of the plant and come in with scissors and cut about an inch or two above the soil line, about one third of the whole plant. And then you've got a handful of greens that'd be enough for that salad for the night.
Now, what do you mean by...
Where you cut is going to sprout and come again.
What do you mean one third of the plant? You're only grabbing one third of the plant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
So you're only cutting off one third of the leaves.
So two thirds of the leaves remain intact. And then next week when you're ready for another salad, you go for another third of the full size leaves and cut them off.
Okay. Because that's always confused me a little bit.
I'm doing it with my hands, and of course nobody can see.
Okay. That's a great method. And I wonder if that delays bolting at all.
No, it doesn't. Unfortunately, nothing delays bolting.
they do have heat-tolerant lettuce mixes and things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's see what Barbara's got for us now. Barbara, you got an answer?
Yeah, isn't it apples?
No.
An apple tree? Oh.
I
missed part of your show, so.
Well, we haven't talked about it at all. So we gave no hints other than it's the tree. I guess there's only one left, isn't it?
Or Douglas fir, maybe?
No, it's the official state fruit there.
I think we should put this off till next time.
Put it off?
And because this is like so basic.
Yeah, they're going to get
somebody's going
to go to the web and get it.
No.
Let's see if there's another call coming in from Tammy. No. All right. Well, we've got to go. Boy, do we got to go. All right. We'll tell them about the official state beverage.
Okay.
That is... Not beer.
Oh, no.
No.
Sure it was.
Yeah. Nope, it's milk.
Oh. Not soy milk or regular milk?
I would bet regular milk, right? All right, well, Maggie Stuckey, thank you very much for coming on here. Your wealth of knowledge.
Thank you. It was fun.
About the one of her books, you've got half dozen or so.
More like a dozen.
Excuse me.
That's all right.
Bountiful Container. And Jim Gilbert. Thank you. You'll be gone next month.
I will be. I'm going to go to Georgia, believe it or not.
Gosh darn it. We'll be back in April.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for listening. Be well.
It's 12 o'clock straight up. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's noon news headlines, and then we've got Jazz Lives with Nick Geffro waiting in the wings. Thanks for tuning in today. Oops. Why isn't it advancing? This is the KABU Headline News at noon for Wednesday, March 12th. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, advisors from Boeing will accompany a team from the National Transportation Safety Board to investigate the missing Malaysia Airlines flight. The most recent reports still provide no clue as to the fate of that airplane. Reports of oil slicks and floating debris, when investigated, provide no clues as to the plane's whereabouts. Once the location of the airplane is determined, International Civil Aviation Organization protocols will determine which country will lead the investigation.
Oregon will no longer be the only state in the U.S. without an Innocence Project, the movement to free wrongly imprisoned men and women. This nonprofit initiative was founded in 1992 by Barry Scheck, one of the lawyers that defended O.J. Simpson. It is unclear why the movement was never introduced in Oregon, but that will change on April 9th when a fundraising event is held at Portland's Stoll Rivers Law Firm.
In national news, Honey Made Graham Crackers launched an appealing new ad campaign Monday that was represented by a variety of families, including an interracial couple, a gay couple, and a single dad. This is the most recent example of marketers attempting to include more diversity in their advertising, designed to appeal to a wider audience of consumers. The company is also welcoming people to join the campaign by uploading photos of their families on established Facebook and Twitter accounts.
Dianne Feinstein, leader of the Senate Intelligence Committee, accused the Central Intelligence Agency with unlawfully removing documents from computers that her committee used to complete a report on the agency's detention program. She charged the CIA with doing this to intimidate her committee. The CIA maintained it took the action to uncover how the committee gained access to the agency's internal review of the detention program. Speaking on the Senate floor, Feinstein charged the agency with violating federal law and seeking to undermine Congress's constitutional right to oversee the executive branch.
According to a poll by the Pew Research Center, 61% of Republicans under 30 are in favor of same-sex marriage and 31% are opposed. This indicates that the attitudes of young Republicans on this subject are more closely aligned with those of Democrats, regardless of their age. 69% of Democrats and independents support same-sex marriage. 17 states and the District of Columbia now allow same-sex marriage.
Slightly more job openings were advertised by U.S. firms in 2013 than in 2012, and the trend is expected to remain steady. U.S. employers posted 3.9 million job openings, which was 1.5% greater than in December. This seems to show that the market is emerging from its typical winter slump.
The recent Academy Awards and the successes of several films they recognized demonstrated that films with female lead actors can generate highly profitable big-budget films. In spite of this, women were still grossly underrepresented in films in 2013. In the top 100 domestic grossing U.S. films, women comprised only 15% of protagonists, 29% of major characters, and 30% of speaking characters. This is a trend unbroken since the beginning of major films in the 1940s.
In international news, a U.S. court will consider claims of abuse by a Guantanamo Bay Yemeni prisoner for the first time. A seriously ill prisoner has been held without charges since 2002 and was cleared for release in 2009. In addition, he has been force-fed over 500 times since 2007 as part of a military effort to break his hunger strike, causing serious internal injuries. His legal counsel maintains these practices represent torture.
Maoist rebels ambushed government forces in remote forests in India Tuesday, killing 20 soldiers. This was the biggest rebel attack since May 2013, when 27 soldiers and several politicians from the ruling party were killed. These attacks are designed to reinforce rebel demands for a greater share of the wealth coming from the country's natural resources and more jobs for the farmers and the poor.
It has been nearly a year since the deadly factory collapse in Bangladesh caused American retailers to demand rigorous inspections and improvements in garment industry facilities located there. The new standard for periodic inspections and reports were set, along with the requirement that results be sent to factory owners and retailers supplied by the factory. The reports being released set a new standard for transparency and credibility. The most recent inspection reports released Tuesday still show some dangerous safety violations occurring. This is Diane Erickson
and Patrick Wilson
with the KBOO News at Noon, produced by volunteers in our Southeast studio in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM in Philomath and Corvallis, and around the world at KBOO.FM. It's time for Jazz Lives, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com.